Chapter 41. That is the tale as it was told to me by an ex-scientist. Verse 53. Renovated and spiritualized, had a narrow escape from a tremendous celebrity. The newspapermen would have made it as famous as the assassination of Caesar, but for their limitations. To return to the claim. I find myself greatly embarrassed by Mrs. Eddy's remark, I regard self-defecation as blasphemous. If she is right about that, I have written a half-ream of manuscript this past week which I must not print, either in the book which I am writing, or elsewhere. For it goes into that very matter with extensive elaboration, citing, in detail, words and acts of Mrs. Eddy's which seem to me to prove that she is a faithful and untiring worshipper of herself, and has carried self-defecation to a length which has not been before ventured in ages. If ever, there is not room enough in this chapter for that survey, but I can epitomize a portion of it here. With her own untaught and untrained mind, and without outside help, she has erected upon a firm and lasting foundation the most minutely perfect, and wonderful, and smoothly and exactly working, and best safeguarded system of government that has yet been devised in the world, as I believe, and as I am sure I could prove, if I had room for my documentary evidences here. It is a despotism on this democratic soil, a sovereignty more absolute than the Roman papacy, more absolute than the Russian czarship. It is not a single power, not a shred of authority, legislative or executive, which is not lodged solely in the sovereign. All its dreams, its functions, its energies, have a single object, a single reason for existing, and only the one to build to the sky the glory of the sovereign, and keep it bright to the end of time. Mrs. Eddy is the sovereign. She devised that great place for herself. She occupies that throne. In 1895, she wrote a little primer, a little body of autocratic laws, called the Manual of the First Church of Christ, Scientist, and put those laws in force, in permanence. Her government is all there, all in that deceptively innocent-looking little book, that cunning little devilish book, that slumbering little brown volcano, with hell in its bowels. In that book as he has planned out her system, and classified and defined its purposes and powers. Main parts of the machine, a supreme church. At Boston. Branch churches. All over the world one pastor for the whole of them. To wit, her book, Science and Health. Term of the book's office forever. In every C.S.S. pulpit, two eaters, a man and a woman. No talkers, no preachers, in any church readers only. Readers of the Bible and her books, no others. No commentators allowed to write or print. A church service. As he has framed it for all the C.S. churches selected its readings, its prayers, and the hymns to be used, and has appointed the order of procedure. No changes permitted. A creed. She wrote it. All C.S. churches must subscribe to it. No other permitted. A treasury. At Boston. She carries the key. A C.S.S. book publishing house. For books approved by her. No others permitted. Journals and magazines. These are organs of hers, and are controlled by her. A college. For teaching C.S. Distribution of the machine's powers and dignities, Supreme Church. Pastor Emeritus Mrs. Eddy. Board of Directors. Board of Education. Board of Finance. College faculty. Various committees. Treasurer. Clerk. First members of the Supreme Church. Members of the Supreme Church. It looks fair, it looks real, but it is all a fiction. Even the little Astor Emeritus is a fiction. Instead of being merely an honorary and ornamental official, Mrs. Eddy is the only official in the entire body that has the slightest power. In her manual, as he has provided a prodigality of ways and forms whereby she can rid herself of any functionary in the government whenever she wants to. The officials are all shadows, save herself. She is the only reality. She allows no one to hold office more than a year. No one gets a chance to become over-popular or over-useful and dangerous. Excommunication is the favorite penalty. It is threatened at every turn. It is evidently the pet dread and terror of the church's membership. The member who thinks, without getting his thought from Mrs. Eddy before uttering it, is banished permanently. One or two kinds of sinners can plead their way back into the fold, but this one, never. To think in the Supreme Church is the new unpardonable sin. To nearly every severe and fierce rule, Mrs. Eddy adds this rivet colon: this bylaw shall not be changed without the consent of the pastor emeritus. Mrs. Eddy is the entire Supreme Church, in her own person, in the matter of powers and authorities. Although she has provided so many ways of getting rid of unsatisfactory members and officials, she was still afraid she might have left a life-preserver lying around somewhere. Therefore she devised a rule to cover that defect. By applying it, she can excommunicate, and this is perpetual again, every functionary connected with the Supreme Church, and every one of the 25,000 members of that church, at an hour's notice, and do it all by herself without anybody's help. By authority of this astonishing bylaw, she has only to say a person connected with that church is secretly practicing hypnotism or mesmerism. Whereupon, immediate excommunication, without a hearing, is his portion. She does not have to order a trial and produce evidence. Her accusation is all that is necessary. Where is the Pope? And where the Tsar? As the ballad says, SK of the winds, that far away with fragments strewed the sea. The branch church's pulpit is occupied by two eaters. Without them the branch church is as dead as if its throat had been cut. To have control, then, of the readers, is to have control of the branch churches. Mrs. Eddy has that control, a control wholly without limit, a control shared with no one. 1. No reader can be appointed to any church in the Christian Science world without her express approval. 2. She can summarily expel from his or her place any reader, at home or abroad, by a mere letter of dismissal, over her signature, and without furnishing any reason for it, to either the congregation or the reader. Thus she has as absolute control over all branch churches as she has over the Supreme Church. This power exceeds the Pope's. In simple truth, she is the only absolute sovereign in all Christendom. The authority of the other sovereigns has limits, hers has none, none whatever. And her yoke does not fret, does not offend. Many of the subjects of the other monarchs feel their yoke, and are restive under it. Their loyalty is insincere. It is not so with this one's human property. Their loyalty is genuine, earnest, sincere, enthusiastic. The sentiment which they feel for her is one which goes out in sheer perfection to no other occupant of a throne, for it is love, pure from doubt, envy, exaction, fault-seeking, a love whose sun has no spot. That form of love, strong, great, uplifting, limitless, whose vast proportions are compassable by no word but one, the prodigious word, worship. And it is not as a human being that her subjects worship her, but as a supernatural one, a divine one, one who has comradeship with God, and speaks by his voice. Mrs. Eddy has herself created all these personal grandeurs and autocracies with others which I have not in this article mentioned. They place her upon an alpine solitude and supremacy of power, and spectacular show not hitherto attained by any other self-seeking enslaver disguised in the Christian name, and they persuade me that, although she may regard elf-deification as blasphemous, she is as fond of it as I am of pie. She knows about her mother's room in the Supreme Church in Boston above referred to, for she has been in it. In a recently published North American Review article, I quoted a lady as saying Mrs. Eddy's portrait could be seen there in a shrine, lit by always burning lights, and that C.S.'s disciples came and worshipped it. That remark hurt the feelings of more than one scientist. They said it was not true, and asked me to correct it. I comply with pleasure. Whether the portrait was there 4 years ago or not, it is not there now, for I have inquired. The only object in the shrine now, and lit by electrics and worshipped, is an oil-portrait of the horsehair chair Mrs. Eddy used to sit in when she was writing Science and Health. It seems to me that adulation has struck bottom here. Mrs. Eddy knows about that. S. He has been there, S. He has seen it, S. He has seen the worshippers. She could abolish that sarcasm with a word. She withholds the word. Once more I seem to recognize in her exactly the same appetite for self-deification that I have for pie. We seem to be curiously alike, for the love of self-deification is really only the spiritual form of the material appetite for pie, and nothing could be more strikingly Christian scientifically harmonious. I note this phrase. Christian sciences choose divine rights in human beings. Rights is vague. I do not know what it means there. Mrs. Eddy is not well acquainted with the English language, and she is seldom able to say in it what she is trying to say. S. He has no ear for the exact word, and does not often get it. Ites. Does it mean owners? Attributes? Eschews. This is another umbrella, where there should be a torch. It does not illumine the sentence, it only deepens the shadows. Does she mean enies? Are refuses? Forbids? Or something in that line? Does she mean Christian science denies divine honors to human beings? Or Christian science refuses to recognize divine attributes in human beings? Or Christian science forbids the worship of human beings? The bulk of the succeeding sentence is to me a tunnel, but when I emerge at this end of it, I seem to come into daylight. Then I seem to understand both sentences with this result. Christian science recognizes but one God, forbids the worship of human beings, and refuses to recognize the possession of divine attributes by any member of the race. I am subject to correction, but I think that that is about what Mrs. Eddy was intending to convey. Has her English, which is always difficult to me, beguiled me into misunderstanding the following remark, which she makes, calling herself E, after an old regal fashion of hers, in her preface to her miscellaneous writings? While we entertain decided views as to the best method for elevating the race physically, morally, and spiritually, and shall express these views as duty demands, we shall claim no special gift from our divine organ, no supernatural power. Was she meaning to say? Although I am of divine origin and gifted with supernatural power, I shall not draw upon these resources in determining the best method of elevating the race? If S. He had left out the word her, she might then seem to say, I claim no special or unusual degree of divine origin, which is awkward, most awkward, for one either has a divine origin or hasn't, shares in it, degrees of it, are surely impossible. The idea of crossbreeds in cattle is a thing we can entertain, for we are used to it, and it is possible, but the idea of a divine mongrel is unthinkable. Well then, what does she mean? I am sure I do not know, for certain. It is the word er that makes all the trouble. With the ear in, she is plainly saying why divine origin. The word rom seems to be intended to mean an account of. It has to mean that or nothing, if R is allowed to stay. The clause then says, I shall claim no special gift on account of my divine origin. And I think that the full sentence was intended to mean what I have already suggested. Although I am of divine origin, and gifted with supernatural power, I shall not draw upon these resources in determining the best method of elevating the race. When Mrs. Eddy copyrighted that preface 7 years ago, S. He had long been used to regarding herself as a divine personage. I quote from Mr. F. W. Peabody's book. In the Christian Science Journal for April, 1889, when it was her property, and published by her, it was claimed for her, and with her sanction, that she was equal with Jesus, and elaborate effort was made to establish the claim. Mrs. Eddy has distinctly authorized the claim in her behalf, that she herself was the chosen successor to and equal of Jesus. The following remark in that April number, quoted by Mr. Peabody, indicates that her claim had been previously made, and had excited horror among some good people. Now, a word about the horror many good people have of our making the author of Science and Health equal with Jesus. Apostrophe, surely, if it had excited horror in Mrs. Eddy also, she would have published a disclaimer. She owned the paper, she could say what she pleased in its columns. Instead of rebuking her editor, she lets him rebuke those good people for objecting to the claim. These things seem to throw light upon those words, are my divine origin. It may be that Christian Science eschews divine rights in human beings, and forbids worship of any but knee God, one Christ, but, if that is the case, it looks as if Mrs. Eddy is a very unsound Christian Scientist, and needs disciplining. I believe as he has a serious malady elf-deification, and that it will be well to have one of the experts demonstrate over it. Meantime, let her go on living for my sake. Closely examined, painstakingly studied, she is easily the most interesting person on the planet, and, in several ways, as easily the most extraordinary woman that... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.